from a legal standpoint and a procedural standpoint, I think we have a pretty strong case.
I will not be a candidate for anything in the 2020 cycle.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. On this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, a former New York congressman will teach at his alma mater, but is not ruling out a return to politics. And New York State holds off on banning menthol e-cigarettes. But first, General Electric is freezing the pension plans of about 20,000 of its workers and offering pension buyouts to 100,000 former employees as it attempts to slash debt. The industrial conglomerate, which employs thousands in the Capital Region in New York, has been selling off assets and streamlining operations amid sagging profits and other negative developments in recent years. The company, now based in Boston, faces about $54 billion in industrial net debt. Whittling that down has become a priority for CEO Larry Culp. Speaking in Albany Monday, U.S. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said it will impact workers in the area.
Look, I think these folks work long and hard, and I'm really disappointed that General Electric is freezing the pensions of 20,000 people across the country. Obviously, it'll affect people here. It's breaking a promise.
GE says its actions would trim its pension deficit by $5 to $8 billion and net debt by $4 billion to $6 billion. Well, the New York State Health Department has decided to put off a ban on menthol-flavored nicotine vaping products until a court case challenging an earlier ban on other flavored e-cigarettes is resolved. Capitol correspondent Karen DeWitt reports.
Governor Andrew Cuomo in late September asked his health commissioner, Dr. Howard Zucker, to convene an emergency meeting of the state's public health council to enact the ban. The request came 10 days after the council voted to ban all other flavored e-cigarettes. Cuomo argues the flavored e-cigarettes are contributing to a steep rise in teen vaping.
The flavored products are highly attractive to young people. Names like bubblegum, cotton candy, Captain Crunch, which was my favorite. These are obviously targeted to young people.
But the ban on flavored e-cigarettes was halted on October 3rd. An appeals court issued a temporary restraining order. Now, a spokeswoman for the health department confirms that the meeting to ban menthol-flavored vaping products has been put on hold while the court case plays out. Owners of vape shops around New York had been preparing to stop selling flavored nicotine vaping products as of last Friday. Mike Kruger is the owner of two vaping shops in the Schenectady area. He says he ran out of some of his most popular flavored products in the run-up to the ban and has reordered them while he waits to see what happens in court.
They put customers in a panic for the 2 weeks that they thought that they were not going to be able to buy flavors after the 4th of October. We did do a great amount of business in that 2 weeks.
Kruger and other members of the New York State Vapor Association say their products have helped many smokers of tobacco cigarettes to successfully quit their habit. Kruger says members of the association are also concerned about the increase in teen vaping. They back measures that stop short of a ban, but include restricting the nicotine levels in flavored e-cigarettes to very low levels. They also support installing digital locks on vaping products that could only be opened with an ID proving that the user is of legal age. The health department's bans on the nicotine products come at the same time that a mysterious lung ailment related to vaping has sickened over 1,000 people nationwide and killed several. The ailment has been linked to black market cannabis products that use vitamin E oil as a filler. So far, nicotine products have not been implicated, though some of those with the illness have said they only vaped products containing nicotine and never used cannabis. Arguments in the case challenging the nicotine vaping bans will be heard on October 18th. Kruger, the vape shop owner, says his side has a good chance of winning.
From a legal standpoint and a procedural standpoint, I think we have a pretty strong case.
But Health Commissioner Zucker, in a statement, disagrees. He says health officials won't be deterred from using every tool at their disposal to reduce the rate of teen vaping and fight what he says is a health emergency. It seems the public is on the side of the health department. A poll conducted by Siena College finds 61% of New Yorkers support the ban, and 78% believe that vaping is a serious public health problem. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Former three-term New York Congressman Chris Gibson, who explored a 2018 campaign for governor, says he will not be a candidate for any office in the 2020 election. I spoke with the Republican who retired from the House in 2016 after the school announced he will teach at Siena College as a visiting professor starting next fall. Gibson, who has held a similar position at Williams College, discussed his classes, his faith, and returning to his alma mater in Loudonville.
Well, it's amazing, to have this opportunity. The Franciscan tradition, the Siena experience was formative for me as a young lad. And so just the opportunity to come back at a very exciting time for Siena. When you take a look at, where they are right now and postured for the future, this is really an incredible opportunity. You know, you see them moving up in the rankings. You see the largest class Siena's ever had that's on campus right now, this incoming freshman class. The leadership and of the campus here of Siena College and also our board have worked really well together to get us in a strong position. You know, obviously we mourn the loss of Brother Ed, the president who just recently passed away. But his legacy looms large here, and we just had a celebration of his life just a couple few weeks ago, and I think that really that spirit is helping us move forward. So, that's really it. And when I think of that, and then also candidly, the challenges. I'm a Catholic. These are not easy time for the Catholic faith, and so to get the opportunity to come here to Siena, hopefully make a positive contribution. So excited to do that at a time that I think is important for the faith is very special.
Have you had your own doubts about remaining in the church, or have you had thoughts about that? You brought
well,
it up. So.
Obviously I'm disappointed by the news that's been reported, but my faith is rock strong. And I really want to see our faith have a revitalization. And I think it's so important. It's too often I think today, material aspects of life are critically important. Obviously they are. I served in the United States Army, and then I served as a representative in the Congress. And so I believe in helping people rise to their potential and enjoy every aspect of life. But in addition to materiality, we have a soul. And I think it's very important to recognize that, and there has to be balance between materiality and spirituality. And so I think, to do that, faith is critically important. We help each other through this. And so I'm hopeful that our faith will turn for the better, and I believe it will.
Well, let's talk about your teaching. You have been working at Williams College, another campus in our listening area. What do you plan to teach at Siena, and what experiences that you've had in recent years in this phase of your career will you be taking to this campus?
Well, yeah. So that has been awesome. So deeply grateful for the opportunity to teach at Williams College. I've had three courses up there. And I've been there for 3 years' time. And so I plan to bring those three courses here to Siena College next year, in addition to envisioning a potentially a fourth. So those three courses, a course on leadership and political change, it's really a course of agency. In a time when the country is so divided and many are disillusioned, this course, really, the graduates of the course come away with a real inspiration that change is possible and that one man or one woman can really help facilitate that. And so we do that through theory, case study, and through practical exercise, through development. So, that course begins with development. So, we look at leadership theory. We look at James McGregor Byrne on transformational leadership. We consider Daniel Goleman on emotional intelligence. We look at David Brooks on character, and we actually look at systemic leadership development, including the Army manual for leadership development. And that leads to then case studies where we look at the legislative branch, the congressional branch, and some military experiences too. And so what's important, I'm a big believer in the liberal arts education. So not only is there theory, case study, and practice, but when it comes to argument, I look to give case studies on both the left and the right. So if we're looking at examples of executive leadership, we'll study in depth FDR, and then we'll look at Reagan. And if we're looking at examples of mobilization, because when you talk about leadership and political change, there's vision, but then you need more than just vision. You need communicative skills and mobilization techniques. And so when you're looking at the latter two, you're looking at Dr. King, a great example that brought about the civil rights. And of course, it wasn't him alone, but we look at the movement and his leadership in it, and we examine on the Y variable the Civil Rights Act of 64 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Incidentally, for Congress, important to note, these laws, so monumental, 9.5 pages. So at a time when we have thousands of pages, these were 9.5 pages, and they changed the country. So we give example on the left, and then on the right, we study Newt Gingrich, and we look at the 1994 election. And, you know, you can imagine, Ian, part of what I had to do is, when I was a representative, is read body language. And so in the first day of class, when I would be laying out the course, I would watch the body language, and I would notice some people like, why am I studying Newt Gingrich? You know, and the very encouraging thing is by the end of the course, many of the students are like, I get it now. I mean, what the heck is wrong with the left that they're not strategizing? Not even if they vehemently disagreed with the policy, they understand how Newt Gingrich mobilized. And that's the important thing here is this Leadership and Political Change course is really there to show students how political change is effectuated in a representative democracy. The other part of the course is developmental. So they take the Myers-Briggs personality test, and they work on essays, analytical essays, where they look to develop their leadership skills. And then a culminating exercise, they write about an issue area they're passionate about, and they come forward with a plan of action, how to effectuate that change, based on what they've learned throughout these case studies in the course and theory. So that's one course I teach. I'm going to be bringing that course here to Siena College, excited to do that. I teach two other courses up there. I teach a course on national security politics. This is really a course on civil-military relations, always topical, but especially today, some feel those norms are really being pressured as far as a non-political military. And, you know, we look at this course is just broad, is broader than just the military, because when you talk about national security politics, you're considering first order questions of how do you secure yourself? And what is the balance between liberty and security? So, like, the Patriot Act comes in view here. Is this the appropriate policy for us to secure ourselves? Are we comfortable with how much liberty we're giving up to secure ourselves? So we look at the Bill of Rights, and so we consider those within the context of the course. So it's not only a course on civil-military relations, but it's also it covers grand strategy, at least an introduction to it. So it's important, I think, for any future leader of this country, really understanding, particularly in a time when we no longer have the draft, I think it's important that we have young leaders who have knowledge and skills and some understanding of some very important constitutional responsibilities for elected leaders. That's the second course. The third course is actually on diplomatic history. And, you know, we go back to the founding and we look at more in-depth grand strategy. We start with George Washington and the farewell address, and we look at how Washington recommended that we array economic, diplomatic, informational, and military power along with the unity of the nation. And we bring it all the way forward to TR, to Wilson, to FDR, to the whole Cold War experience, going forward to Nixon, and then ultimately Reagan's critique. We have some of George H.W. Bush. And then, you know, we do see a change with George W. Bush with his preemption policy coming out of the neoconservative camp, Barack Obama's consequentialism, and then ultimately Donald J. Trump and what he is endeavoring to do. We look at both his words and actions. So that's a course on diplomatic history. It's really meant to empower future leaders with an understanding of statecraft, which is a complement to the national security politics, and then also the leadership and political change course, which is largely domestic politics and policy focused. So that's the program. It's three courses. Here at Siena, I'm looking to potentially bring a fourth course forward, and that would be on leadership and ethics. And here we would really go back and take a look at St. Francis. But then, you know, we also look at writers from antiquity, including what Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle, St. Thomas, Aquinas, Augustine, and then going forward into Walzer and Just and Unjust Wars. And so, but the whole purpose of which a lot of the theory would be on character development and good choices and morality and morals and ethics, because the purpose of which, when we look at leadership, we're really trying to foster public service leadership, and that means putting the public good ahead of private gain. And so that would be the intent of that course. So that would be in the works. So we're looking at four courses total. I'll teach two in the political science department and two in the history department here at Siena College starting next fall.
The announcement of your appointment made note that your visiting term is expected to last 2 years, starting in September 2020. Of course, I started doing some quick math to figure out which election cycle we'd be in. Is it fair to say that you've put politics behind you at this point?
Well, it is fair to say that my priority between now and the spring of 2022 is exclusively on the leader development of my students. I've immensely enjoyed that the last 3 years. As you point out, we did negotiate this contract so that it is completed by the spring of 2022, so I will not be a candidate for anything in the 2020 cycle. Beyond that, we'll have to wait and see. We did put on the table the possibility for three additional years after that, but that's something that would have to be a mutual agreement between the college and myself. So, you know, that is my answer to you.
Yeah, the door's not closed is what I'm hearing.
Well, you know, I think the listeners know, too, I'm very passionate about the country. I mean, I did my very best to serve, to bring people together, to solve problems. I believe passionately in this way of life. And, I mean, that's what drove me to write Rally Point, the book, which I think is the framework which will bring us back together. So, you know, I do have a calling to serve. Right now, it's being fully sated by the work I'm doing in working with young people here at the college level. But as to whether or not I go back into elected office, we're going to have to wait and see. That's something for down the road.
Let me get you on a couple more quick headlines lately. If you were still in the House right now, where would you be on this?
You know what, though, Ian, I got to tell you, that's the one thing I'm not going to do. You know, here I am having an event today under the auspice of Siena College, and I'm very respectful of that. So I do, as a private citizen, so we can always re-engage this topic at a later time if you want to do this at some point down the road.
Okay.
But as far as today, I'm not going to comment on American politics because I wouldn't want that to – two things would be a problem with that. One is whenever I do speak as a private citizen, I always make it clear I'm not speaking on behalf of Williams College or Siena College, and I wouldn't want to move into a gray area there. And then the second thing is I wouldn't want to step on this message, which is really about the future leaders of America. And to do that, you know, we're working here on some foundational stuff, understanding the Constitution, rule of law, looking at facts, and then, you know, passionately, coming forward with arguments on both sides. This is the true enlightenment, right? Letting the clash of ideas and the truth to come from it. And if I were to, in the middle of this interview, to take positions in American politics, I think I'd be stepping on my own message. So I'm not going to do it in this interview.
All right. That's fair enough. Let me try to ask you just in a different way, a generic question, and you could take it or not. It's up to you. Speaking of all of the history that you've been covering at Williams and you'll be teaching at Siena, how unique is the current moment in American democracy?
Well, I think it is unique, and I'm concerned for a couple reasons. First, the discourse, just the way that we interact with each other. And, you know, one of the things I found in the military is that after a very short period of time, the organization tends to take on the personality of the commander, he or she. And so I think tone matters. And when we see a situation where we're very vitriolic towards each other, it's especially hard to find common ground. And I see it now everywhere, not just among the executive branch and the legislative branch, but I see it just among Americans and the way they interact on social media. It's very demeaning, I think very little good can become of that. I think it's very important. This is why I think the Franciscan tradition can be very helpful here in treating everybody with dignity and respect. This whole way of life counts on it. And if you think about what was so remarkable, what was indeed so exceptional about America is we changed the way that we bring about, we do political change different. Political change before us was violent. You had a king, queen, aristocracy. They ruled for a period of time, and then they got weak, and then you saw that in many cases sometimes their head was taken off, and then you had violent change. We said it doesn't have to be like that, that we can actually debate our differences, and we're not trying to homogenize thought. We're very proud of the variegated thought and expression that we have. But what we need is a way to mediate and resolve differences in a peaceful manner. And so that is all predicated on us that our discourse would be civil. That's the first thing I would comment about today. The second thing is, and this has not been novel to the moment, but it has gotten no better and it's only gotten worse, and that is we're moving away from our legal arrangement that we had at the very beginning, which was a rule of law, which was changing. It was political change by rule of law, by changing in law and sometimes constitutional amendment. Increasingly, what you see is that political change today is brought about by fiat, executive orders and actions. And regardless of what party is in charge, I mean, they think if they win the election, the spoils of political change go to them, and the party opposite, regardless who it is, calls into question legitimacy of that change. And so this is not good. So when you couple together the vitriol along with the fiat, and you have a recipe for us to continue to spiral downward. And what's really needed is the kind of leadership that puts the public good ahead of private gain and says we're going to get back to first order. We're going to get back to basics here, which is the Constitution and the way that we do political change. And that does mean all of us have to be more patient, because if you don't like what's going on, you know, there's a temptation, regardless of what party you're in, to say, you know what, I just want an executive order to do X or Y. If you're a Republican, you can fill in the blank. If you're a Democrat, you can fill in the blank. But that's not the way that we were meant to do business. We were meant to work together. Our representatives are meant to listen to us, find a way to accommodate, come forward with legislative change, and the executive could either sign it or veto it. And if it gets vetoed, then you go through an iterative process there and ultimately towards change. Although that's laborious, sometimes frustrating, that, I think, was part of how we escaped history. And if we want to continue to be that country that has peaceful evolutionary change, then we have to find a better way to respect each other's. We have to respect the diversity of thought and express it in a way that's civil, and also commit to this rule of law. And that's what I would tell you is my reaction to what's going on today. And I don't think I'm very concerned. I mean, it's part of the passion why I wrote Rally Point and why I'm in the classroom. I think I'm on the front lines of tomorrow when I'm in the classroom. I've been so very privileged and honored to be at Williams College, and I'm excited to join in Siena next year.
Well, that's former New York Congressman Chris Gibson, and your students are lucky to have you, Congressman. Thank you so much for this time, and I will take you up on that later conversation about current events.
Great. All right, Ian. And best wishes to all the listeners out there, too. And say hello to Alan for me, please.
Well, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Remember to stay subscribed for the latest from the Northeast. Thank you for listening. Till next time, I'm Ian Pickus.